You are in tune to the Mindful Podcast with Coach Joaquin. I am really excited for this Mindful. Jessica Rhodes, Executive Director of the nonprofit yoga studio Yoga Seed in Sacramento, California, an Ayurvedic practitioner, an all-out amazingly warm and fun person to be around, and I'm super thankful to have her in my life. She sits down with me and shares her story of being introduced to yoga and how that's transformed her life and her mission. Now, Yoga Seed operates as the number one studio in Sacramento that serves all types of people ranging from mental health, prisons, low income, disabled bodies, trauma, and basically anyone who has breath and willingness in their body, to be honest. Jessica is super passionate about bringing forward yoga as a way to shattering the social norms and accessibility that yoga has become, at least in the Western side, and having it serve as an incredible tool for healing, which is well proven in her personal track record, as well as what she's accomplished with Yoga Seed and the amazing people there. Now, as for the Ayurveda aspect, if that's a new word for you, more than likely the concept isn't new. Essentially, it's the heart of all medicine and a way of being in tune with your body. Jessica shares some of Ayurveda 101 and how that can immediately play a role benefiting your life in a real simple manner. I know this because, well, I took her recommendations, and after this interview, it kind of felt silly that I haven't been doing what she recommended earlier. We did sit down outside the Yoga Seed studio for this interview, and just as a reminder of just kind of being amongst the elements, so to speak, we did have occasionally little kids or cars going by constantly, and just kind of went with the flow and just seeing what can really come with it. So it's a very organic interview, to say the least. Nonetheless, Mind Fuel with Jessica Rhodes. Let's rock. So here with Jessica Rhodes, Executive Director of the Yoga Seed. We're sitting just outside the Yoga Seed. Very incredible person I've had. Very fortunate to meet. Thank you for being part of Mind Fuel today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Now, very much renowned in the yoga world as Yoga Seed, or at least in the Sacramento area. Repeatedly again, the number one yoga studio was ranked by, oh gosh, SNNR, KCRA, the number one for me for sure. And I'm sure that's still always just the beginning, as you guys are just getting bigger and better every year. But what I want to trace back first to is where yoga started for you. And what comes to mind for me is when you broke your back in Korea. So you can take us through what that time frame was and what that led to, how that led to yoga.
Yeah, well, it's a good question. How did yoga start for me? Well, I think that I've always wanted to be really physically active. You know, if I'm not, then depression and anxiety and stress comes more easily. I used to play rugby and then martial arts. Nothing about yoga's marketing ever appealed to me. Like, there was like nothing about being a thin white woman stretching in a quiet room mattered back then. I was just doing my sports where you run into people and tackle them down or punch them, you know.
Naturally, your characteristics.
My characteristics. And then when I was in Korea, I broke my back. It wasn't the first injury, and it wasn't the first time someone told me because of my childbearing hips or because of my X, because of my Y, that I wasn't going to be able to perform anymore. And I really love it when people tell me I can't do something. It's like the fire that allows me to do whatever it is that I want to do. So when I broke my back, I really didn't, the doctor spoke enough English to explain to me what was going on, but I didn't really have a support team there or people I could talk to, because being immobile makes you really angry and hopeless and helpless. And my Hapkido teacher taught me how to breathe better and said that this was a good place to start. And so I started breathing, and something that happens when you break down is you become unwilling to stand for what you stood for in the past. And so when I broke my back, I became unwilling to take any shit from my job and unwilling to take any shit from myself. And so I left my job and went traveling and still never thought about yoga really so much. But I saw these posters up that was like yoga for mental health and yoga for well-being and yoga for business strength and yoga. I mean, yoga is not marketed anywhere else like it is here. There weren't like pictures of white women doing back handsprings. Like, yoga was taught as something that anybody could do. And when I went to the classes, I was one of the youngest people there and often the only white person and only a woman. And so I went to classes learning about yoga as something different than what you find here necessarily. So that's kind of how I started. And immediately it was like being in harmony with yourself. Kind of like when two instruments are discordant, you just know, even if you don't know anything about music. And what it felt like was I just knew that I was hearing myself and that I had more choice. So that's what happened.
And then the upcoming from that, what did you gain from beginning yoga? What would it mean for you emotionally? What did it mean for your back?
Well, my back hurts all the time if I'm not doing yoga or if I'm not exercising. Now, hard, high-impact exercises like running, I need to have some core stabilization calisthenics in order to maintain high-impact things. Integrating breath to movement is something yoga allows. Most people who are athletes incorporate breath to movement naturally over time, but in the beginning of any athletic process, you don't. You just like throw yourself at it, or like throw the ball as hard as you can, or like you do whatever you can until you realize that your breath is an amplification tool, which is, I think, something that you learn. So yoga taught me that, and I can now do a lot of things. The injury that I have is supposed to cause chronic pain for the rest of my life. My ability to do yoga has helped ease that pain.
We have a yoga class going to take place, and kids having fun around here. So I want to dive into a little bit of life at the ashram.
Well, I hated life at the ashram. I don't like being
told. Start there, then, yeah.
I don't like being told what to do all the time. The cultural difference in India, I didn't understand. Like, how did we really, in this individualistic culture in the United States, we're not taught how to revere a teacher well. Like, we're taught to judge and criticize and to question everything, and that's not how teaching is done there. So when I was questioning everything, I was always frustrated instead of trusting the process, which is essentially what I had to let go of in order to process that education better. Letting go of the need to know everything right away. Letting go of the need to understand everything. We have this concept that if we don't know how to do things perfectly, then we don't have the skills to do them at all. But perfection comes from 1,000 practice times, and we can't ever be perfect if we don't fail a lot before we get there. And I mean, teacher trainings are short. They're 200 hours. I mean, I've never gone to hair school, but I imagine learning how to perm somebody's hair takes about that much time. So if you're implying that in 200 hours a yoga teacher could learn how to be some kind of spiritual guide that has any concept of muscles or anatomy, that has any understanding of pranayama, or really what it is to be a karma yogi, to like give in service, is kind of unrealistic. I mean, it's definitely unrealistic expectations. I had to let go of what I thought I was supposed to learn, you know, and realize it was just one step. 200 hours isn't enough. 500 hours isn't enough. 2,000 hours isn't enough, you know. When you walk down paths in life, they become part of your life. And I mean, for someone who loves tennis, can you think of how many hours you've ever spent on the court or learning about rackets or watching somebody else play tennis? Then, like, when it becomes embedded into your life, that's when you become great at something. Not because you're good at it, but because you care about it enough.
Understanding that, did you feel being at the ashram where you have a whole new different discipline and fighting what seems like fighting yourself to kind of say, okay, this is the way, but everything else that I've learned is saying otherwise, did you feel a certain moment of where, like, okay, I guess I'll have to give into this, to what I'm learning here, to be with it?
Well, my teacher came up to me, and he was always really, he laughed a lot, which just pissed me off. He was always singing and just, like, totally joyful all the time. I'm like, how could you be so joyful right now? We need to be processing things and learning, and what are you doing? And we have to fight in order to live. Don't you understand that? And he was like, no, we have to cheer in order to live. He came up to me once and said, he was, like, smiling and laughing, and he goes, you know, Jess, sometimes it seems so hard to be you. And I was like, fuck you, motherfucker. I was not happy about that. But I think maybe a week or two later, I realized, like, okay, well, it is hard. It does feel hard to be me. Mm. It does feel like I have to be fighting in order to be alive. Which is, I think, something anyone who's ambitious can relate to. You know, like, you must be striving in order to be a valuable human. And that's really a state of being. It's a choice. That is a choice. And so he said that, and for some reason, about a week or two before the end of the training, that, like, clicked for me. And I was like, oh, well, today I'm going to try choosing being happy about being here. And, like, choosing being open to whatever they teach me, but not have to be, like, a puppet who just absorbs everything they say without thinking about how it relates to me culturally, because that's, you know, cultural misappropriation, which we see all the time in yoga as well. So, I think I just decided to change the way I looked at things. And that sounds really simple, but I think, in fact, it's quite... it's eye-opening, and it's challenging to even conceptualize, and that happened.
Sounds like a nice transition to at least be able to go from a point where you're fighting yourself, it seems like, a little bit, lack of a better way to put it, but I'll say, like, you know, I can choose this, which opens doors to other things, of being able to choose and realize you're becoming the author of your own life, rather than maybe in a place of reacting and needing to push through, it sounds like.
Yeah.
It's kind of cool. So from there, coming back from India, you sparked the seed of Ayurveda, I think, in you, or you had in you, and you learned that in California, correctly? Or bigger portion of Ayurveda medicine. What has Ayurveda become to you, and what has it become for your ability to share with people Ayurveda and the medicine of food and everything that it encompasses?
Well, you know, I was just sick all the fucking time. I was sick all of the time. As a kid, I mean, I have celiac disease, which I didn't know for most of my life. They thought I was narcoleptic. My stomach always hurt. I thought maybe I was a hypochondriac when I was a little girl without realizing that the gluten was really harming me, because that wasn't really diagnosed that frequently. Then you have to get, like, a biopsy of your intestines, and I think that's pretty rare. And then when I went to India, it was like I caught every biblical disease possible. It was like a leper, and, like, a big boils down my face. I didn't contract leprosy, but I got, like, every horrible intestinal disease you could imagine. I was there for 6 months, and I could say probably 10% of it I was not throwing up. And every time I got sick, I'd go to this Ayurveda clinic, and they were like, oh, well, you're obviously getting sick, so you could learn how to be better. And I was like, obviously I'm getting sick because everything is making me sick. So I learned a lot there about Ayurveda. And then when I studied at the Dhyana Center in Sebastopol, I really learned how to, again, this is a theme of fighting yourself, but I learned how to accept what my gifts were instead of looking at them. We're trained to look at everybody and to judge everybody. So am I big enough or small enough, powerful enough or spiritual enough, like dedicated enough or mobile enough? There's so many dichotomies that we want to be all of. And I think Ayurveda taught me to look at where I am in the world and to appreciate that, and appreciate that about other people too. Like, you don't look at a tree and wish it were a river. like a tree has its gifts to the world. Like it creates oxygen and shade and beauty and color and compost. And a river has gifts for the world. And we're not all trees and we're not all rivers, but we definitely are not both. So that helped. Being able to see disease like that too, instead of something that was attacking you, to see it as like, okay, well, a river even overflowing, even flooding around is not an evil. It is a scenario that's reacting to other scenarios, to an influx of water. And if I view a disease like that, then how can I treat it? Like, if I wake up one morning and have red face and I'm really angry and frustrated and bitter and inflamed and I feel swollen and puffy, then I look at that as like fire spreading throughout my body, fire and dryness. And if I want to do something about that, how would I treat a fire on a pile of leaves? You know, I'm not going to throw more leaves on it or spark more matches, which would be like drinking a margarita or like calling somebody to bitch about how angry I am. You know, I can do cooling things that remind me of, you know, I can drink more water, which would be like actual addition of water. I can take soft cooling breaths. I can stretch slowly. I can do the opposite of fire to allow for the opposite of fire to grow in my body. So I don't feel like attacked by things anymore, I guess is the, or like at the whim of people. It's been pretty huge. Learning Ayurveda has been pretty huge for me.
So with the mass of what Ayurveda can be and encompasses, what do you want people to know about Ayurveda?
That it's simple. Ayurveda is simple, and you already know most everything you need to know. For example, everyone knows what to do when they're really hot. They take off a jacket, or they get a cool glass of water, or they take a shower, or they turn on the air conditioner. They do already what they want to do when they're hot. And when you're really cold, you do the same thing. You put on a warm jacket, you have some ginger tea, you know. You follow these really traditional paths already. Now, I think what I get frustrated with in the Ayurveda world is people get really obsessed with what their dosha is. Like, what am I? Tell me what I am. Tell me, please, what I am. You know? Like, tell me that I'm a Taurus and that Tauruses mean I'm stubborn. And I want to fit into that exactly. And Ayurveda can be like that a little bit. And practitioners can be really focused on culturally how Ayurveda evolved in India. So you have to have like amla in order to, you know, improve your sours in your life. But I disagree with that. I think that the universe and God provides. So whatever you have accessible to you can be used, even if it's not some far off distant Ayurvedic herb. Even if you can't make time for the warm water in the morning, you'll still be all right. Like, Ayurveda doesn't have to be rigid. It can be flexible, just like the environment we live in. I think trust yourself. Take more time to listen to yourself and to eat based on what you feel is right. I mean, we all know we take a bite of something and it's, you know, the like 25th cookie and you're like, I don't like this anymore. But we still keep going, and we don't stop to ask like, what hole is it that I'm trying to fill with this? And or we don't eat and we don't eat and we get emptier and emptier because we long to be empty. And I think that's a huge issue too, and we forget what it feels like to be like the earth and to be stable. Like, neither is good. Overeating or not eating, neither is good. And I think instinctively we know that, but we long for really strange things. I don't know. Personal.
So going back to the dosha, how important is that? That is, should people really, really dig deep in knowing their dosha? Getting into that world?
Well, with any new habit or new hobby, you have to have something that hooks you. Like, you want to start running, you like go buy some new shoes or a Fitbit, or or you want to love Ayurveda, then maybe, or like love the horoscopes and you learn about, you know, what you are. So if that's what it takes to make you excited about learning, is reading a document that reminds you of yourself, then definitely learn about doshas. But there are two realms. There's what you were born as and what you are now. Prakriti, what you were born as, and Vikriti, what you are now. And I think something that we ignore is we look at what we were born as, our Prakriti, and we use that to educate ourselves on what we are now. But it should be the inverse, is we should look at where we are right now. Where are we out of balance right now? Where do we feel out of balance right now? And how do we work backward from there? So instead of saying, I was born a Vata subtle, Kapha slow, I'm actually saying, really right now, my issue is Pitta. I work too much, I spend too much time on the computer. I have fire-based illnesses, and I need to work from there instead of from the other way. And if you don't know anything about Ayurveda, this won't make any sense, but always look at where you are right now, you know? And that's how yoga works too. I mean, always look at where you are right now. Even if you can do this triple back handspring, back flip superstar, Kapalabhati, maybe today it doesn't feel that way. You know, maybe today it's a yin class, and maybe today it's the back flips, you know?
So someone who is new to Ayurveda, what are three things they should know or begin doing right now if they're like, I heard it's a good medicine. What can I do?
Yeah, well, that's a big question, man. Dr. Lodd has some really good books about Ayurveda and self-healing. There's some good questionnaire options in there. Things like, do you have more... It essentially explains the elements. So the elements in Ayurveda are different than Chinese medicine. They're ether, air, fire, water, earth. Do you have any of these in too high of a quantity? Too earthy? Are you sitting on the couch too much and like depressed and unable to move? Too much earth? That could be too much earth. Is it you're edemic and swollen, too much water? Is it you're angry and have ulcers and red face and your hair's falling out on the top? Like that would be too much fire. Is it you're too flighty and indecisive and anxiety? That could be too much air. And are you just like spaced out and, you know, haven't felt like you've been on the earth in a long time? And that's too much ether. And if you look at the world based in those elements, then you can start to see everything like that. So look at a flower vase next to you. Where do you see the ether? Where do you see the earth? Where do you see the water? Where do you see the fire? And if you can see things in their component parts, they're really easy to dissect and really easy to understand. And if that's too much, then what are three things for Ayurveda? Take 5 deep breaths before you eat. Take 5 deep breaths before you go to sleep. Take 5 deep breaths when you wake up. And use that time to see how you feel. And if you become proficient at that, then take 5 deep breaths before you react to something and notice the feelings in your body. That'd be the 5 deep breaths. Cure all.
A big self-awareness aspect.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Ayurveda, you can also touch food and see if you like are instinctively into it, you know? You touch it and you're like, even though apples are great for me, if I touch it and I'm like, ugh, gross. You know, like touch things, look at them, smell them, like taste them, but not in the way that's like inhalation. Like taste them and see if they're right. Like, can you take 15 chews in something and it still be good? Or does it lose its flavor after 3 chews and then it's not something that's good for you right then? Experiencing life is Ayurveda, more than being regimented on how you practice. It's really about experiencing life. For me, I don't know. No doctor. I'm not a doctor.
But you share definitely the knowledge that can improve the quality of someone's life. And that's valuable in itself. That's what someone's looking for, and a doctor isn't quite bringing that element. So I want to step over to the side of the yoga seed. Going a little bit beyond the walls and reflecting where it was a couple years ago to where you're now, TV at least probably once a month, opening up a new studio and just well beyond the walls of whether it be the prison programs. and getting into certain clinics or being able to create programs with there, even the all bodies class where it's meant for, or designed for anybody who has a heartbeat and some breath in them, they can get benefit from the yoga that the Yoga Seat provides. What's Yoga Seat becoming and where's it going?
Well, I can answer from my perspective, which isn't always the one. I don't lead the ship alone. You know, we're definitely a collective. We make decisions, and everyone kind of needs to be on board. So where do I see the Yoga Seed going? I see the Yoga Seed continuing to move towards beginners, like true beginner curriculum. Like, I'd love to see us create more teachers and populations that are not socially normative bodies. So more teachers who don't have use of arms and legs, more teachers who are bigger than the teachers that you see in the magazines, teachers of color, teachers of various languages, teachers of, you know, I would love to see that community grow so that our community can grow. I'd like to see, this isn't just my wish, to see a curriculum develop so that people, even in rural areas, could follow a curriculum on how to stabilize core muscles or joint systems or get out of back pain or take deep breaths. You know, I'd love to see that develop over time. But it requires acquiescence on the part of all the teachers, which is definitely, it's 40 of us have to agree, which is a big number. I'd love to see trauma-informed programming continue to grow at the Yoga Seed, because trauma affects everybody in this nation. And if it hasn't affected you, then it's affected someone that you know. And to learn how to give breath, meditation, mindfulness to people really allows your brain to reroute and reprocess living in this physical world again. And it's a really gorgeous practice that allows that. And it's not the version that we're used to. It's not the like loud pumping music, hot sweat, like 900 degrees, like vinyasa yoga, which I enjoy. It's not that though. I mean, you can't send someone who is in severe PTSD response from being controlled their whole life through something like that. So how can we continue to create trauma-informed program options for people that don't have, you know, really anywhere else to go? And, I don't want to compete with the places that exist now, because I'd love to teach new people so that they're then able to go to the other studios and experience the wealth that they all have to offer in the more advanced realms of pranayama or meditation or asana. And I'd love for us to work on how to be more trauma-informed. I want to be a great place to work. I want to have really healthy employees. I want to have well-paid employees. And I want to be a model for nonprofits and yoga. I don't think there's not many places to look up to like that right now. And they're forming, which is exciting. But I want to keep seeing us grow in that field.
So with all that said, so many layers well beyond what anyone thinks of what yoga is in a studio where it's the spandex, and whether it be the loud pumping music or something like that. Obviously, Yoga Seed has so much more it offers to the community and gives to populations that just aren't the radar for the mainstream of yoga. How can one support the Yoga Seed?
Well, you know, you could always give us money. Yeah, we have a donation program where people give $15 a month. You're one of our Bodhichai members, yeah. And so am I, which is awesome. They give $15 a month, which is the price of one yoga class. And with that, we serve around 15 people a month with a class. You can always donate. But and learn more about what we're doing, or an organization in your area that does something similar, frequent that organization, donate that to that organization. Another option is learn what yoga is or how you connect to yourself. And when you take pictures and market yoga, don't do it of yourself in a bathing suit on a surfboard bending backwards in a socially normative body. Take pictures you haven't seen of what your yoga is. Take a picture of yourself cooking and hashtag yoga. Like, allow yoga to shift in the mentality. A huge problem I run into is I'll go to a mental health facility and say, we have a curriculum that really supports acute mental health issues. It's a yoga program. And they'll look at me and go, huh, what's yoga? Or, you know, if they don't know. And then they do a Google search on what yoga is and they see 12 pictures. One picture of a bunch of people doing yoga and the rest of them are one white woman with blonde hair doing yoga by water, and they're confused because none of their clients look like that. And so in order for me to do my job well, I could use everybody who cares about yoga posting what their yoga looks like. I was giving a talk somewhere and one of the women walked up to me and said, what's your favorite yoga pose, I think she said. And I looked at her and I said, you know, my favorite yoga is the moment before I walk out to the corner store to buy a pack of cigarettes and like a little bottle of whiskey, and I choose not to. Like, that's my favorite yoga pose. And I was like feeling really amped about saying that. And she was like, oh, your life must be really bad right now. And I looked at her and I'm like, what lie are you telling to yourself, man? Like, what lie are you saying that things aren't hard and that you don't question yourself all the time? Because maybe I'm alone in doing that, but yoga allows me to take the 5 breaths between me and when I react, and that's my yoga. It's not when I'm doing the most badass backbend, although that's cool too. Like, we need that in marketing, but that's not the only thing. Well, I guess I'm talking, I'm getting on my like soapbox right now.
See what you gotta say.
But yeah, like, I want people who are quadriplegics to feel like they have access to yoga too, because they do. Like, I want people who are 500 pounds to feel like they have access to yoga because they do. It is not an elitist activity. It's not even a sport where you need to work as a team. Like you said, you're battling yourself. And for anybody who doesn't realize they're battling themselves, that's the first step. It's the first realization, man. Like, is to realize that every time we think we're not good enough, we're battling ourselves. And if we could be on our own team, like, what would that look like?
Well put. So from Bodhi tribe to battling yourself. Maybe that's the first step. But if you want to support all this.
Yeah, I don't know. Fucking Instagram post.
A lot of different ways you can support Yoga Seed, if not the vast world of yoga, just branding it or allowing it to be what it really is at the core essentials, rather than what the marketing has produced the image of it to become something cute and fun. So closing down to our last few questions, what's a challenge you're looking to conquer in the next 6 to 12 months? Whether it be business, whether it be yourself or something you're trying to grow or let go of, for that matter.
I'd like to slow down a little bit. I'm working on feeling okay without having to achieve all the time. Like, what does it feel like to float with the river and the current and not against it? But also, and not like strive against it, but also not just get stuck in a gutty and then like a gutter or the side of the river and float aimlessly because I'm afraid of what happens farther down. Rest a little bit more. Move a little bit more, but without the need to accomplish something. It's hard for me. Working on that.
It's a good one to definitely focus on next 6 to 12 months. In your words, where does greatness begin?
I think that greatness begins in honesty. I think greatness comes from that place where we can be honest with ourselves about how we feel and with others about how we feel without needing to fall in line. I think that greatness in people begins when we're not at our greatest, but we recognize that even our hard emotions like anger or sadness or frustration or confusion are real, and they deserve as much space in our life as joy and inquisitiveness and curiosity. The same way a muscle has to break a little before it can become stronger, I think greatness is the acknowledgement of life in failure. That there is no, like, fail. Everything is win. And I think greatness is not ignoring that. And not ignoring it in other people, you know, like, laying down the power play of needing to be better than someone else. Like, being better than someone else allows you to strive, but that's not what it's about. Like, you don't run every day. You don't run every single day just to be the best. You run every day to beat yourself. You know, like, you don't journal every day or do yoga every day or wake up every day to be the best at that. You wake up to be your best self. And if you recognize that everyone out there is just trying to do the same thing, you're kinder to other people, that's greatness. You're gentler to yourself, and that's greatness. And, you treat the world a little bit better, and I think that is hugely great. Small steps.
Well put. I think the last few podcasts, the idea of learning from failure and that there is no failure, it's just a learning, that's been the common theme. So take a big note of that, and hopefully everyone else listening too. So if you were to go back and you had a chance to talk to maybe the 20-year-old version of yourself, taking what you had now, going from yoga, going through some of the adversities and growing, what would you tell her?
My 20 self?
Yeah, something that age range, but yeah. What would you tell yourself?
Spend more money, do more stupid shit, do everything stupid that you can, be nicer to yourself, be nicer to your family. They don't have to understand you for you to love them. Exercise every day, even if it's just rolling out your mat and rolling it back up. Yeah, just keep doing, just do, like, just do. You're not dead yet, so there's no reason to be afraid of doing the weird stuff that maybe makes you nervous. It doesn't matter what other people think. You can dance ugly. More people will hit on you than if you dance pretty. Dance ugly.
Dance so cool.
Yeah.
That's a fun one, I think.
That's my favorite.
Yeah. For me, that's dancing like girls in the kitchen.
Yeah. Someone said that to me once. I was dancing at a wedding, you know, and you're really conscious of everybody, you know, when you're dancing around, you're like, okay, I kind of cut loose, but I kind of got to keep track of where everyone is to make sure no one's like looking at me and laughing, you know. And someone was just like, I dare you to dance really ugly. And I looked around and there was no one that I really needed to impress. And so I just danced like the ugliest that I could make up dancing. And just like a crowd gathered around me and people were like cheering and more attention than I've ever gotten before. And people were like almost in tears being like, thanks for doing that, because I felt like I could do it. And it's so weird, like, how many people just want to dance super ugly?
The trends of dancing, maybe that's what we'll see. You set that one up, the ugly dancing.
Yeah. Well, someone was telling me about a movie they just watched where this old man was giving a testimonial that he had never fallen in love. And when someone asked him why, he thought, I mean, he's an old guy and he's never experienced like romantic love with anybody. And he said, well, I never learned how to dance. So I think maybe that's part of it. And it was really touching.
So like there could be a lot of layers of battling self again.
And dancing's all second chakra, which is all your sexual, emotional self, and your ability to move freely is water, and water's your ability to love. So if we're getting back to Ayurveda, then, you know, dancing solves all the issues.
That's a good piece of knowledge you dropped in that one.
Thank you.
Yeah. I love it. So this last question, and I think you got a taste to what this was like a few months ago, whenever your last yoga class was. So if you were to visualize, you're about to begin your last yoga class. You're sharing in a room full of your students. What do you tell them before practice begins?
Same thing I always did. I ask them who's new. I welcome the new people. Tell them to take care of themselves. And then we just start.
And if anybody needs to reach out to you?
Don't.
Emails, nothing.
I'm just kidding.
Done, mic drop.
Yeah, I don't know. It depends. If you have a question about the yoga seed, you can go to our website and find out about that. If you would like to sponsor my personal growth, then please send checks or money orders to the yoga seed attached with my name. You can find me on Facebook or Instagram or LinkedIn. Yoga seed is at your service as well, theyogaseedcollective.org. Just kidding, it's theyogaseed.org. And yeah, that's it.
Thank you for your time, Jessica.
Yeah, thanks, Joaquin. Everybody sign up for his 5K challenge.
Yeah.
I've done it. It works.
It works. Great testimony live right there. Cool.
Thank you, Jessica Rhodes and the Yoga Seed for all the work you guys do in the Sacramento community and expanding well beyond that. There's a lot of great content online that they had Yoga Seed RX conference not too long ago. And you can log on to the Yoga Seed or search YouTube for some of their keynote speakers they had at a really incredible and empowering event a few months ago. And thank you for that last little testimony there that I got from Jessica. She was a Coach Joaquin training athlete early on in the 5K program, and it was a blast working with her, and we did complete her first 5K with that. And if you're ever traveling through the Sacramento area, I highly, highly recommend visiting the Yoga Seed. There's currently one studio downtown and embarking on a second one opening very, very soon, which is really, really exciting to not only be a nonprofit growing, but also a nonprofit yoga studio growing and being that impactful in the community. Really, really amazing and great fun stuff. We are now in 2016, and if you're looking to make some big changes, if you're looking to embark on your first 5K or your first half marathon, I really, really love talking to people and to see what the best route is to get there. So if that's what one of your big goals are right now, feel free to shoot me an email or find me online, and let's chat about what you can do to move forward, and hopefully that can be some kind of impact. So on different ways to contact me, or just look up some past information I've posted, log on to CoachJoaquinTraining.com. Thanks for checking out MindFuel. Subscribe on iTunes, share it with a friend, and stay in loop because I have some really, really fun things coming up in the next few months. More interviews, more audios coming out, and stay in the loop by subscribing to Coach Joaquin Training.